Okay. All right, show of hands. Pro technology or anti technology? Pro.
Pro.
Anyone anti? You got a little of this, a little of this. Okay. So, what would you say Judaism in general? This is a very big, broad question. Would you say Judaism is pro technology? I don't mean like all the negative stuff that comes along with technology, but just technology itself. Is there anything in the Torah, anything in Jewish tradition that sort of leaps out, that sort of indicates that the Torah would have a positive versus a negative view of innovation to make our lives more efficient, to just make the world smaller in terms of communication? Positive, negative, anything from the Torah that would kind of leap out at you that would seem to indicate a positive, negative, or neutral attitude? What would you say?
I have a thought of, like, Yosef, like, understanding, like, hygiene and, like, how to, like health and how to, assess the civilization in Egypt.
Okay, good.
Like, that sort of technology.
But why do you say hygiene? Interesting.
Like, plumbing type, I think I remember learning about that. Like, mm-hmm. Any kind of, like, keeping yourself healthy and using technology
He devised some sort of food distribution system to aid ancient Egypt that was suffering from that area was suffering from a terrible famine. Anybody know who else invented something even earlier that was really technologically breakthrough? It's not mentioned in the biblical text. It's based on the Midrash. Welcome.
Hi.
Have a handout. And that is Noach. Noach, who was the tzaddik, the Torah describes him as a righteous person, that God saved him even though he was destroying the rest of humanity. How did Noach get his name? So if you look at the tail end of Parshat Bereshit, before Parshat Noach, it says because he brought comfort and consolation to his generation. And Rashi says because he invented the plow. There is this tradition that Noach was the one to start helping people work tough grounds and lands. If you remember, Adam was punished for eating in the Garden of Eden, from eating what God forbade him to eat. And one of the things it says that with the sweat of your brow you will earn you will make bread, and there will be thorns and thistles, and it'll be difficult to work the land. Noach innovated. And even earlier than Noach, what was God's instruction to Adam in the Garden of Eden? What did he tell Adam? If you remember this a few weeks ago in our class on relationships, if anybody was here, or if you were, if you have any recollection.
Mm-hmm.
I remember what I ate for breakfast this morning. But God told Adam, v'kivshuha, one word. L'chvosh means to conquer. That his job vis-a-vis the environment, he told him in chapter 1, l'chvosh, to conquer. And in chapter 1, he talked about the environment, and he said, la'avda u'lishamra, to serve it and to watch it. But Adam 1, as described in chapter 1 of Genesis, Sefer Perek Aleph, Sefer Bereshit, he was told to really harness the forces of nature and build a better world. Cure cancer. Just make stuff better for people. And that's why I don't think it's a coincidence that Jews, even if they're not observant or following the Torah's direction, it seems to be in our DNA to try to somehow make the world better. I mean, look at Israel. It's a tiny country beset by hostile neighbors. And it's, after Silicon Valley, it's the greatest per capita, not even per capita, by the way. It's the greatest producing, like, innovation country in the world, next to the United States. It's unbelievable. Where does that come from? Oh, we're really smart. There are a lot of people that are smart. We're not only the smart people. There are a lot of people that are educated. But we seem to have almost an innate motivation to innovate and to make the world better. So overall, the internet really is a blessing, and I would argue, as a result, a Jewish blessing. But like every blessing, like every medicine, it's got its side effects that aren't always so healthy. And Judaism recognizes this too. The Torah in general allows for something good, even when it carries the potential for danger. Can anyone give me a good example? When the Torah not only allows, but even commands. to use something that could be destructive, potentially. What do we do every Friday night? We make the Kiddush. And what do we make Kiddush over?
Wine.
Over wine. It's alcohol. And people's lives have been ruined by alcohol. And in the Muslim religion, you're not permitted to touch it. And you go to any Kiddush on Shabbos, people are they're having shots. They're, you know, they're Purim, people getting drunk. Now, that's a little of an aberration. You're not supposed to get drunk. We talked about this last week. But what would Shabbos or Yom Tov be without wine? Yet it could literally destroy our lives. The internet's no different. It's got all these positives. You can stay connected. My oldest son lives in Israel. And, you know, it's sometimes I have a better connection with him than my daughter, who's in school in Midtown right now. You know, and, you know, how many people have met their soulmates online? J-Date or whatever you use, you know. You know, the internet also links us with so much wisdom. There's more Torah on the internet. It's unbelievable how much Torah there is on the internet. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Like, the crazy numbers of sophisticated websites. You know how much Torah has been digitized by Safaria? That's one organization, one company alone. It's unbelievable. And it's, like, available now at the touch of a button. I could just say Genesis chapter 2, da-da-da, give me the commentaries. It'll give me 42 commentaries. Most of them in Hebrew, but some translated into English. And it's all on there, and they just keep putting more and more on. You know, and the other thing which is really important, although it's not helping as much as we would like to, which is that we know so much more today in real time. I always, you know, growing up, it boggled my mind how the world could remain so silent during the Shoah. The truth is, most people didn't know what was going on in the camps. I'm not saying nobody knew. And there is evidence that the President of the United States knew what was going on. We have concrete evidence, which is very upsetting, and still didn't bomb the tracks. We have a famous photo, aerial photo, taken from a U.S. bomber during the Second World War. It was in view of Auschwitz and could have just slowed down the killing machine. But the Allied forces instructed those bombers to do nothing. I mean, to continue to carry out their missions. So there were people that knew, but the typical person, when you have like revolutions and movements now, because everybody knows everything going on, can't hide anything. That's good, that you can't hide anything. Now, I think it loads us up with added responsibility. Now we know. There's no excuse. If you know, God forbid, but look what happened in modern times. Everybody knew what was going on in Rwanda, and the world remained silent. And but unlike during the dark years of the Shoah, where there was so much secrecy and deception, so much unknown during the Holocaust, so it's an unbelievable thing. Now, along with that can be fake news. And one of the reasons that the Jewish people, in my opinion, are suffering so much, and I don't just mean in Israel, but I mean anti-Semitism throughout the world, is because if you manipulate the news, which is easier to manipulate because it's not going through like third foreign sources. Like when I grew up, there was Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 7, NBC, CBS, ABC. Okay? Before CNN and Fox. And even when CNN and Fox. So there's some level of credibility. There's some I'm not saying it's all great, because there's lies everywhere today. But you could, every person is their own news station now. So you could have a TikTok station, channel, you could have your own little Instagram page, and keep posting stuff that looks real to the uneducated. Okay, and we know this. We know that they were, before October 7th, Palestinian and other groups that were posting very misleading types of videos that made the IDF look like they were doing inhumane, irresponsible things. And then you find out it wasn't the IDF, it was this, it was that. And then publications like the New York Times picked up on it. And they were posting, and then once in a while they'll retract, but they don't always retract. And so it could be quite dangerous. Now here's the deal. Doesn't matter. The cat's out of the bag. There's no turning back. You know, question is, do we just ignore it? And when we raise our children, do we keep them from it? So I'm curious. Because it's a very complicated question. It can be, there's so much good, there's so much Torah, there's so much, you know, exposure of the truth. But along with that, there's so much falsehood, and people aren't reading books and magazines and scholarly articles anymore about history. People getting their history from TikTok. And the people who are the TikTokers are not all historians. They don't know what they're talking about themselves. Not all of them, some do. Some are quite learned and knowledgeable and smart and know how to package things quickly. You know, my kids used to watch, what was that thing? Whenever they couldn't follow some subject, they didn't like their teacher in high school. What's that? What is it? Khan Academy. Oh my God, Khan Academy is amazing. So like my kids, I would go in there, I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm studying for my poli sci test. I was like, where's that? The teacher's bad. This is 10 times better. My daughter right now is taking a psych class. She has a big test tomorrow. She just started college. She hates her teacher. She can't understand a word she says. She's learning the whole thing on Khan Academy. And it's really good. They're like top guys there. So the ability to really, you know, access and gain information is so much greater and easier today than it was. You have to sit with these thick, heavy textbooks that were academic, you can't understand half the stuff in there. And then you got some guy in Khan Academy who's like a brilliant person who can explain things simply and easily, like a teacher should. So I want to identify a couple of the new challenges from a Torah perspective, because my sense is we keep it, but we deal with it in the right way. We try not to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Is that the expression? But we get rid of the bathwater. We don't want the bathwater, right? We want to keep the baby. We want to get rid of the bathwater. Okay? We like the baby. The baby's good. So take a look at your handout. There are five issues I have, five negative issues that I have identified. I want to run through with you the next 20 minutes or so. Okay? And any comments? Anything, please? Ideas?
I was just going to say that I think social media or New York Times or whoever it is, like, if it's something that's not accurate or not true, like, a retraction doesn't even matter because the damage has already been done.
The damage has been done. But at least, you know,
it goes and it runs and it doesn't.
You know, it's like when
the person who receives it isn't going back and be like, oh, the New York Times actually retracted it, so now I'm going to, like, think about it differently.
I don't know. Do you guys agree? What's your name again?
Max.
Do you agree with Max? I know when I hear a New York Times retraction, you know, I pay attention to it, and it gives me pause the next time I read something from the Times that I should read it with a grain of salt and maybe not accept everything 100%. But at least that's something. There's no retraction from people's Instagram. But, you know, you post something, you find out it's not true. How many times do people then go back and say, I just want you to know the post that I sent out yesterday, this... it was really a picture of this. I thought it was this, but it was that. How many times do you see that? People are not honest with themselves. Yeah, Jameson.
Something that I found that there's a lot of online is a lot of, like, code words and secrecy. And then when people call them out, like, conspiracy theorists. So, like, that's not what that means, but
right.
That is what it means.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. I just think you can't assume... you just can't assume. You really got to get to the... people lie. People misrepresent, you know. I went to a lecture last night for 2 hours by an academic from Israel, Dr. Dan Polisar. And he's collecting money. Princeton, Harvard, you know, academic... who's a part of a think tank, but he's got 3 kids in the army and they don't have proper gear in Gaza. You ask the army will tell you they have proper gear, but they don't. And the army keeps saying they do. Now, that doesn't mean everything the Israeli army says is false. But if you speak to people in the field, they will tell you, we don't have what we need. We don't have the right helmets. We don't have the right night vision. We don't have this. We don't have that. And that's why there's all this money being raised, not by organizations, but by regular people who have cousins and relatives in the army who want their kids protected properly.
What about the billions of dollars that Congress gives Israel every year? Like,
yeah.
5 billion or something?
those monies, I'm not an expert on this, but my understanding is that those monies are part of a deal that Israel has with the United States to purchase a certain amount of high-level weaponry from the United States for the IDF. You're talking about, like, you know, F-16s, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, kinds of, you know, tanks and planes and things like that. High-level drones.
R&D.
Yeah. Yeah, but helmets and night vision and goggles and knee pads and gloves.
I actually think the really big problem is that there was no way to know, say like 30 years ago, there was no way to know if something in the New York Times was wrong. And now, like, every little thing you can, there's always someone to pinpoint, oh, this was wrong, this is wrong. They're always, everything's, these are just journalists, they're not experts.
No.
There's always going to be something wrong, so I think the reason there's no trust in media is because we have this expectation that if they're wrong, oh, well, everything must be wrong. So we kind of have an all or nothing thing, and then I don't know why people start trusting whichever accounts and people. That's a different, I mean, people can't even read anymore, but that's the real problem.
I mean, I think, listen, that's true, but I think people will give them some room for error if it's an honest error. But if it's portraying the news in such a way to bolster the agenda, the political agenda, and the affiliation, if it's more to the left or if it's more to the right, and really color the way you present, because I will tell you, as an attorney, you can present the same set of facts very differently. If you're a prosecutor versus a defense, you can say the same thing very differently. And the idea of an objective journalist is to try to really present the facts as they are, and we've lost that. CNN, everybody knows, is a little more to the left, and Fox News is a little more to the right. So who's got the truth? Who is telling it like it is? You know, and that's a really important question, and I think that's one of the reasons. Like, when I grew up, I don't remember a particular network being more to the left or right. Or maybe I was oblivious to it. I was younger. I don't know. I don't remember there being a slant that they're bending a little more this way, they're bending a lot. That's more of a recent, when I say recent, like last 20-year phenomenon. And I think that's eroded a lot of people's trust in the media. You're just giving me a point of view, and you're presenting the facts to back that attitude or that viewpoint up. And that's bad, because then... And that's why ideally... Like, a news agency should have people that are more conservative and more liberal. And by the way, universities too. Universities should have people that are more left and more right working together so that students can get to hear both perspectives and make their own choices, as opposed to just it being one way or the other. That's my, you know, view. All right, so let's run through a couple of the issues. The first issue, if you're a journalist or you are using social media, and by the way, if you're using social media, in my opinion, you have the status of a journalist now, because you're doing what they do. You're just sharing with your followers your understanding of what's going on or what you think other people should watch. So what if it's negative information about other people? What does the Torah have to say? Are you allowed to share negative things about other people? And let's say it's true, because that's always the excuse I hear from people, but it's true. Now, there might be a license for a journalist to do this if people need to be informed of what's going on. So, but that's an exception to the rule. That's not the rule. In halacha, in Jewish law, follow the pasuk, Lo selach rachel be'amecha, lo samad al dam re'echa ni Hashem. Famous verse from the book of Leviticus, Vayikra, chapter 19. You shall not go around as a gossip monger amidst your people. You shall not stand by idly by the shedding of your fellow blood. I am God. Now, what does that mean? Don't go out. What's a gossip mongerer? And look at the language of the Torah. Lo selech. The word selech means to walk. Don't walk around as rechilos. Now, take a look at the bottom. There are three types of inappropriate speech in Judaism. Rechilos, lashon hara, and motzi shemra. So I just want to run through each, and that everybody here knows. They're all biblically forbidden. As far as Judaism is concerned, we'll talk about the exceptions in a minute and whether your Instagram account is an exception. Rechilas, what's Rechilas? Lo selech rachel b'amecha. What does that sound like? What kind of person is doing that? Don't walk about as a talebearer amongst your people. A tale. What's a talebearer? A gossip mongerer. What's gossip?
Like a yenta.
It's a yenta. What's a yenta? That's exactly what it is. Yeah, help me. What?
I heard it from her. It's like playing telephone.
Yeah, you're just sharing something. Is it false information necessarily?
Depends.
Maybe not.
It could be. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
It's still gossip, even if the information is true, and even if the information is not bad. What's an example of gossip where the information may be true, it may not necessarily be bad? Yeah, what do you think?
Saying that, like, someone has a crush on someone else and so you're, like, trying to get them together, which might be a good thing, but it might be a bad thing if it's not true.
But let's say it is true. Let's use that example. It's a good example. But it's not something that your friend would want other people to know, that they have a crush on somebody. Unless it's somehow necessary to fix them up. Maybe if you plant a little seed, she likes you a little, you know. But let's say, but if you think that it's personal information, okay? What were we going to say in the back there?
I was just going to say everything printed about Meghan and Harry.
Okay, good. That's gossip. Right? Not that I follow it, but so let's say they went out and they went to some place. And they didn't, it was nothing wrong with going to that place, or, you know. But we're just talking about other people's details of their lives. There's a billion-dollar industry in this country. Okay? When I grew up, there was a show. It was like Rich and Famous or something. I don't know. It was like one show. Now there's like a dozen. Or just people posting about. The idea is not to get so hung up on the details of other people's lives. It's a little pathetic. And what's damaging to our souls? What's wrong with it? What's bad about it? First of all, it's just revealing confidences. Did you hear so-and-so redid their kitchen and looks like they spent $100,000 in their kitchen? So that kind of information, it just creates jealousy in other people. It creates interest in other people's personal matters. And that's not really the ideal thing that we should be talking about, is other people's stuff. It's not your business. Oh, but it's true. So, you think other people want to be spoken about like that? And just because they're famous doesn't mean they don't have feelings and they don't get hurt by other people talking about the details of their lives. And that's ostensibly the most innocuous form of forbidden speech in Judaism. Let's get a little more harmful. That's rechilut. The second category is called lashon hara. Lashon, language, hara, bad. You're saying something negative about another person. Did you hear so-and-so stole money? Now, let's say it's true. Doesn't matter. Now, there's where the secular law and Jewish law diverge. Because under secular law, if you sue the New York Times for saying something, you know, defamatory against you, all they have to do is, to defend themselves, they have to prove that they had a credible source for what they said. Okay, and they believed it was true, even if it wasn't true, by the way, objectively. But if they could demonstrate, and you have the burden of proof. You have the burden of proof. In England, it's actually the burden of proof is the other way, which is why I just blanked on her name. When she accused an academic in England of being a Holocaust denier, she had to prove, the burden of proof was on her. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, from Georgia.
Yeah.
She's now at Emory University.
She's a professor at Emory. She spoke here. Deborah Lipstadt. Very good. Yeah. So she had to prove, I forgot the guy's name.
Dave Irving?
Irving, very good. Very good. He slapped a defamation suit against her, and she had to prove why she had a credible basis to believe that he was a Holocaust denier.
And she won.
She won. It was made. It's a great book, and there was a movie that came out called Denial. Really worthwhile. In the United States, whoever gets accused, in other words, you have to. If you get accused, you just have to prove you had a credible source. In halacha, Jewish law, it doesn't matter. Why? Because we're not just trying to keep things civil in Judaism. We're trying to keep things moral. We're trying to prevent other people from being hurt. And just because something is true doesn't mean you have a license to share it. What's the exception? There's got to be exceptions to this. What do you think?
When you say something bad about someone who's like actually evil, like Hitler, like, you know, or some
when you're trying to prevent what?
Death. Harm.
Harm to another person, then it's not only permissible to share, it's you're responsible to share. There's a verse in the Torah, Lo Sitin Lifnei Iver, before a blind man, Lo Sitin Mechshol, you should not place a stumbling block. It's not just meant physically, like someone who's blind, you can't put a block before them. But if someone is blind to a certain information. So what's a good example of that? Well, familiar? Somebody who's not aware of something, and they're about to be cheated. If you have first-hand information that they cheated you, then what's your responsibility vis-a-vis that other person? You have to tell them what happened to you. You have a mitzvah to share the information. It's not Lashon Hara. Even though it's true and it's negative information. But you're not permitted to allow somebody else to be harmed. And we're not just talking physically, but even financially. Same thing applies, and this is very complicated, in shidduchs, matchmaking. You're not permitted to lie. Okay? But you don't have to share everything about the person. And there's no license to badmouth someone because you got hurt. You can't take revenge on someone because they hurt you. I'm going to, you know, spread some nasty things about them, even if they're true. Except if it's necessary for other people to know. What would be an example of that in like a relationship?
They're abusive.
Abusive. If, God forbid, somebody was abused by somebody and you see them getting into a relationship, you need to tell the other person. But you really, it cannot be hearsay. It has to be firsthand knowledge. And I would caution anyone from sharing anything before speaking to a third party. So, because most of us are not objective, we're partial, and we, you know, James, you got a question?
Yeah. What about talking about the dead?
What about it?
I don't know. Like, let's say you're talking about a historical figure in their life. Is that like Lashon Hara?
That's a really good question. There has to be a toelet. Toelet is the Hebrew word for purpose. You can't just shoot the breeze. If there's some purpose and that people need to know so that they could be educated properly and not fall prey to something, then you can share it. But if it's just because it's juicy information, then in general we try to stay away. And by the way, this is one of the most difficult and challenging areas of Jewish tradition, Lashon Hara. It's hard. Very, very hard. So the two major exceptions are business. And by the way, this happened to me. Welcome, Rabbi Ezra. Somebody, I was in the, I don't mention where I was in some synagogue, I was like a rabbi, I was speaking in some shul. And so after I got finished talking to somebody, a third person walked over afterwards and said, I just saw you talking for like 10, 12 minutes to this person. Just want to make sure you don't do any financial deals with him. This happened like 5, 6 years. I said, no, he was just, I was going to hit him up for a donation for MJE. He goes, oh, that you can do, but don't enter into a deal. And because he cheated me out of a lot of money. Now, right away, I was like, why are you bad-mouthing this guy? But then that's actually the halacha. The tradition is, if it happened to you, you have responsibility to share the information with another person. So let's go back to our question before us. You have an Instagram account, you have a Facebook account, or you work for CBS, NBC, CNN, or Fox. If the public needs to know something, to be informed, to know whether or not to support or, you know, be against a certain candidate, or just to be aware of what's going on in the world and they're not duped by a certain movement, then it's not only appropriate to report, but it would probably be considered a mitzvah, or at least a making sure that you're not in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. Remember that verse that we said before blind men, do not place a stumbling block. But if it's just to get more likes on your Instagram account, and you're doing it at the expense, even if it's true information, and even if it's not negative information, it's just schmoozing about other people's personal lives. You know, the lifestyles of the rich and famous, or your own friends, or other people, and you're sharing private information, and you're publicizing private information, that is something the Torah frowns on. I would say this is probably one of those areas where the gap between the Jewish tradition and what's happening in our world is massive. It's massive. And there are some Torah observant journalists out there. I've gone to a couple of interesting panels and lectures on journalists that are trying to the best of their ability to earn a living, you know, sell newspapers or whatever it is they're selling, get you know, and actually adhere to these principles. It is not simple. It is not easy. And the culture is very much up against this. Because basically whatever sells is okay. And the more people you can shame and the more people you can make look bad, the more, because we are drawn to the negative. If it bleeds, it leads, they like to say. And the more negative information, just put on the news. Anytime, just watch CNN or Fox for an hour. Okay? Or watch your feeds. See how many in that hour, how much positive stuff gets reported that's going on in the world, and how much negative. What do you think the numbers are?
I actually don't even follow the news anymore because it's never good news. It's always bad news.
Okay, but by the way, that is not new. My mother, blessed memory, I used to watch the news with her. You know, she's like, it's just all bad. And it's not true. There's so many amazing things going on in the world, and no one's there to cover it because it just doesn't sell as much. And it's basically catering to the lowest common denominator of who we are as a people. And actually, Rav Cook, I saw this, Rabbi Ezra, you'll appreciate this. I saw an amazing article in one of Rav Cook, who is a mystic, about how journalists are there, sort of sent by God to be able to inform the world, but to elevate humanity. And as he was talking about journalism. And you could do such unbelievable things. And let people decide, you know, as opposed to, but it's really, really complicated, obviously. So Lashon Hara, by the way, is not limited to the spoken world. So social media poses all sorts of issues. I want to mention something also. The Chazon Ish was one of the great rabbinic decisors in the 1950s in Israel. He said, you're permitted and even required to be aware of the character and behavior of a communal leader. So we have good leadership. Now, does that mean you have to constantly post negative things about the leaders? Once everybody knows what they did, that was wrong, move on. Okay, I'm just giving you my own commentary. But the Chazon Ish said it's perfectly permissible for a journalist to publicize some negative behavior of a public leader who's running for office because you got to know who you're voting for. But the Chazon Ish says use extreme caution not to deviate from the truth. And not to go beyond what's relevant and necessary. Now, he's referring to Jewish communal leaders, but I think this applies to all political leaders. It's important for voters to be fully informed as to the positive and negative potential leaders, but it has to be accurate and not gossip. And B, it has to be necessary. The problem is politics is about winning elections, and negative ads are more effective. So how do you get into office if you follow the rules and the laws? Someone has to break the cycle. Someone has to break the cycle and stop being a jerk. Okay, because I remember, I'm going to sound like an old man, I loved watching debates. I actually, a few weeks ago, watched an old Ronald Reagan-Walter Mondale debate. Ronald Reagan was in the United States when I was a kid, in the 80s. Now, it's much less entertaining than watching Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump debate. But there wasn't one mud-slinging remark about another person's character. They literally were debating the issues. And there was a back and forth on the merits or demerits of their positions on all of the, on economics, on the Middle East, on the this and that. It was boring. It was not as entertaining. They're watching Donald Trump tell Hillary Clinton that he would lock her up, and Hillary Clinton saying how much money he steals from people. You know, people would, you know, but this is, I remember my kids, this was 2016. I was watching the debates and my kids were ready. They weren't even like, so, they're like, this is so stupid. They're such babies. They walked away. One of my kids walked away. This is stupid. I'm not learning anything. Kid, like, it's just, it's become such a, so, now, any of you see the movie Post? P-O-S-T? You got to see this movie. You saw the movie? Really, really important film. It's about the disclosure of classified documentation by the United States government that for years Vietnam was seen as an unwinnable war that the government knew it was not a winnable war, and how president after president continued to send basically our boys over there and cost over 55,000 American lives and gained very, very little politically. And I'm not against, I was not against containment personally. I was very involved in Soviet Jewry, and I believed in the United States' approach of containment. But the Vietnam War was just, and if people, if the masses were aware of what the government knew, there would be people, there would be more people alive. The populace in the United States would not have stood for what the Nixon and whatever, some other
Johnson,
you know, kept doing. And, you know, so it's critical for people to be aware of these things. You can't say, oh, it's Lashon Hara against the CIA. It's Lashon Hara against, you know, people dying. These policies have ramifications. If you look at the, do I have it here? No, page 190 in one of his letters, Rav Cook said that a newspaper has to aim to elevate the community. And therefore, in its focus and presentation, it should aim, I'm sorry, it's not on your sheets, it should aim to be one level above its readership. So I want to, can you find one network that's one level above its readership? Rather than catering to the base interests, and he says, prurient tastes. But only one level above, he says, so that its words and messages should be accessible to its readers and can set a tone that's noble and idealistic. And his words were really prophetic. I mean, he lived in the 20s and 30s. He was the first chief rabbi of Israel. Now, it's easy to put down a newspaper fulfilling to live up to this, you know, standard, but and point the finger at a journalist, but we're all journalists today. If you have a couple of followers on your Instagram page, you're doing the same thing. All of us are. And so that's number one. We have to try to be disciplined and not simply share something because it's juicy and I'll get a lot of clicks and a lot of likes. We have to try to think about the way this is impacting other people and impacting our society as a level of responsibility. The second issue is called verbal abuse. If you take a look at the verse there in the Velosanu Isha Samito, it's from the book of Leviticus, chapter 25. You shall not wrong one man, his fellow Jew. You shall fear your God, for I'm the Lord your God. Now that is, you're not allowed to wrong people using words. It's called verbal abuse. It's a Torah prohibition. What does that have to do with the internet? Ask a high school kid. There's this thing called cyberbullying. It's a real thing, you know? Wikipedia defines it as the use of the internet and related technologies to harm other people in deliberate, repeated, and hostile manner. You don't see it as much with adults, but you do see it with adolescents. Picture postings of certain kids in certain ways, and then it gets shared around. It depicts the teen in a very negative light. It's worse than regular bullying. Because if any of you were bullied as a kid, so you could come home after a bad day of bullying and get a hug from your parents. There's no escaping cyberbullying. It just stays on there. And it could kill a kid's self-esteem, and it has led to substance abuse and depression. And it's an absolute prohibition as far as the Torah is concerned. And again, the fact that it's anonymous doesn't in any event detract from the prohibition. Jordan Peterson, I'm a huge fan of his, and you know, he just says that the reason the internet is, it basically takes away, you know, it's a completely anonymous kind of thing. Like, you can attack someone and nobody will know who you are, who said it, when it come from. You know, that's why it's a very cowardly kind of thing to do. You don't have to really show your face. The only response you can have to this is awareness that we may be willing to do worse things when we don't have to face the person we're bullying. As an aside, I that's why face-to-face interactions in general are always better. Really, really important not to rely as much as we are on texting and communicating with other people on certain issues through texts. You're missing the body language. I remember Rebbetzin Young Grace, a blessed memory, She used to say when you're calling someone for a date, like your first date, don't spend a lot of time on the phone. Use the phone to make the date and get off and then go out. Because I've been involved in fixing people up and they don't even get to the first date because something went wrong on the phone or the text or the this. You know, it's not a fair way of communicating with people all the time. When there's a famous teaching that when God told Miriam, Moses' sister, about how Moses' prophecy was superior to all the others, he uses the language peh el peh, mouth to mouth, face to face, right? And that's the way the Torah was given, right? God didn't send a big text to the Jewish people, and he didn't write it down and hand you a piece of paper. He called everyone to the mountain, and we had that encounter with God. And we got to get back a little more to face and face encounters. Extremely, extremely important. Let's go to the third. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but inappropriate sites is a big, big deal.
What about this one?
Oh, actually, the third issue is before inappropriate sites is mindfulness and distraction. I could spend literally an entire class on Nicholas Carr wrote a book called The Shallows. Did anybody read the book, The Shallows? What the internet is doing to our brains. He studied the impact on the internet on how we think. He describes what we have today as called dispersed consciousness. Can you tell what that's about, dispersed consciousness? Right, where you jump from one topic to the next because you're reading an article and then there's a hyperlink to something else and then it takes you to something else and then something comes up on your... You're like, your brain's all over the place. It's scattered. You're scattering your brain. And it's making it harder and harder for young people to stay focused on one issue. It's chipping away at our capacity for concentration and contemplation. And as a result, he argues the deeper type of thinking, where you make associations between ideas, creativity, depth of understanding, is becoming compromised. He has this great line, he says, "Once I was a scuba diver in the sea of words, now I zip along the surface like a guy on a jet ski." It's very superficial. And our ability to engage in deeper thinking is becoming compromised. Now, none of this is aimed at stopping anyone in this room from sticking to the internet. You're all going to stick to the internet no matter what I say tonight. And so will I. The idea is to be aware. Half of therapy is just awareness. If you're aware, then you're like, okay, I'm reading an article. I'm not going to pay attention to anything that comes for the next 15, 20 minutes. And by the way, also, I'm doing this because I'm not doing this as much as I can. I'm writing, trying to write another book. So they say that if you can focus for 30 minutes, uninterrupted for 30 minutes, okay? And then give yourself like a little treat after the 30 minutes, like 5 minutes of doing whatever you want. Like watch a little something that you like. I like watching Seinfeld. It relaxes me a little. I don't know. Watch a band, listen to some good music, go out for a walk, and then come back and do another 30 minutes. And give yourself those breaks, even if it's more than 5 minutes. You're going to accomplish a lot more than if you just spend a lot of time and just allow all of these distractions to come in. Now, I'm not saying I practice what I preach here. I'm just telling you stuff I read. Okay, I'm trying. Some of this is aspirational, just being honest. But it's really, really important. Okay, we have two other things. One is inappropriate sites, which I don't want to say a lot about. Everybody knows what I'm talking about, but internet porn and all this other stuff is wreaking havoc on our relationships. There's one study by Amanda Maddox and her colleagues of men and women ages 18 to 34 who were in romantic relationships found that people who didn't view any porn had lower levels of negative communication, were more committed to the relationship, and had higher sexual satisfaction and relationship adjustment. Their rate of infidelity was at least half of those who had watched sexual material alone and with their partners. Nathaniel Lambert, Sessin Nagash, and others conducted five separate experiments which demonstrated that watching porn reminds the viewer of all the potential sexual partners out there, which in turn lowers one's dedication to the person that they're actually involved with. It also leads viewers to swap out the person who's actually lying in bed with them for some fantasy person they've never met, probably never will. It has real ramifications. It's not just like, oh, something the Torah frowns on. It's also something that is negatively impacting our relationships. The last issue I want to just mention, I'm going to finish up and I'll take some questions, it has to do with modesty. What is the internet and modesty? What's the connection? Yeah, what do you think?
I feel like modesty is about not drawing attention to yourself, but the internet is about drawing attention to yourself.
Yeah.
I think especially for social media, you're like painting a picture that isn't true to make your life like look better than it is, but it's not even for you, it's for everybody else. Right? Like to make your life look better.
Yeah.
Compared to everybody else.
Yeah, I remember we went away, I don't know, like some winter vacation break. We went to Florida, our family, and my daughter was taking pictures. We rented some boat for the day, or like, I think we just took out little rowboats or something, I don't know. And I remember her saying something about a friend of hers whose family couldn't go away. And I said, it was like, Abigail, are you gonna post that? Because, you know, your friend who couldn't go away, she's going to watch it, and it's going to be like FOMOing all over the place. You know? And then she'd be hocking her parents, who didn't do anything wrong by not taking their kids to Florida. You know what I mean? Like, you create this whole thing, and the idea of not flaunting what you have. And that is another huge, huge, wide gap between our society and the Torah's values. That doesn't mean you can't enjoy something that you have. You can't enjoy the way you look, or if you really like the way you look in a certain dress or something like that. But the idea of just exposing it to everybody else is just very much antithetical to Judaism's basic norms on modesty and privacy. Take a look at the line there on number 5. He has told you, O man, what is good and what does the Lord demand of you, but to do justice, to do loving kindness, and walk discreetly. That's where the Hebrew word tzniut, which means modesty, to walk modestly with God. It refers to the way we dress, not to show off, not to wear, you know, not to wear things on our sleeve, so to speak. You know, if you've got it, flaunt it. It's interesting, you know, I just went through this with my father, who, you know, as many of you know, just recently passed away, and if anyone's been to like a traditional Jewish funeral, people get buried, no matter how prominent they were in the community, no matter how wealthy they were, how well known or popular, same white shrouds, same simple pine box. Because we're not supposed to view ourselves as greater than others. And if you have more money, you buy, you know, something. You know, I remember when my mother passed away many years ago, and my dad at the time didn't want to deal with it. So I was the guy that went around with the funeral director, and he was literally showing me all these caskets. I'm sorry to get so graphic. Like, and he was like a used car salesman, you know. He was like, and if you want to show real honor to your mother, this is really... And I stopped him. I'm like, dude, listen, I know you got to earn a living. I know this is a business. But like, it's not showing more honor to my mother because we spent more money on her casket. It's going into the ground, and it's meant to disintegrate with her physical body back into the earth where she came. And we're not supposed to be ostentatious. We're not supposed to, you know. And what does the Torah say about Moses? The greatest accolade that Moses received at the end of his life by God, the man Moses was the humblest of all people. Because when you're that connected to God and when you're that wise, you realize how little. Einstein said something similar to this in his memoirs, that the one thing he came to the conclusion after all of his scientific inquiry and exploration was that man is but a speck within the cosmos. We're just a little nothing. And it's important to have that kind of perspective, not to not have self-esteem, but not to have this arrogant, look what I have, and look who I am, you know, kind of thing. Facebook gives us, you know, a platform to show off. And again, it's all about moderation. Telling everyone everything is great is counter to the whole concept of tzniut, of modesty. It's also promoting something which isn't real. We end up promoting like a false sense of ourselves, because who posts their failures? I had this cute idea. Nobody ever ran with this. Didn't I mention this before? I call it like Failbook. It's like it would you're only allowed to post the things that are bad that happened to you in life. It'd be the most depressing thing in the world. But it would kind of like even out the nonsense. Like, everybody's in a constant alert. I know people who are like clinically depressed who are on their, like, everything is so great. You know, it's so fake. It's ridiculous. Now, that's not to say that, you know, my son just got engaged and I missed him. Did they sing a little Mazel Tov or something for him? I don't know. Whatever. Okay.
Waiting for you.
And, you know, why was I bringing that up? No, so he got engaged. I posted it. You want to share your simcha. There's nothing wrong with that. You just want to keep in mind other people, you know, and not, you know, you're not going to post, hey, my girlfriend dumped me, or my boss just demoted me or fired me altogether. It's not a great post, but I don't know, to me it would be very refreshing if we started having those posts a little more, to kind of even out all the nonsense and the falsehoods.
Well, during COVID, I actually did post, like, don't call me, my throat hurts like heck, I can't talk, just don't call me. And then I had people calling me and telling me to remove that from Facebook because it's not a good post.
But what is a good post? But the more vulnerable you make yourself, sometimes the more clicks you'll get, you know? Tell everyone how miserable you are.
Well, no,
you'll get some calls. Look at it, work.
So I can get some sleep.
LinkedIn is basically that. So LinkedIn, you'll have legitimately, like, the most disturbing things you'll ever see, which is like...
Really? Oh my God.
LinkedIn is like, 6 years ago, today was, you know, the worst day of my life. My daughter died, but that's what inspired me to start this content creation company.
Right.
It was like, it's like, Jesus. It's like, it's like, my God. It's like, it's really dark. It's like, it is the most disturbing thing. Yeah, it's like, yeah, oh man. LinkedIn is... It's Failbook, but with capitalism.
With money.
It's very disturbing.
With money attached.
It's like I think it's the worst. I think all of the bad things in this, that's LinkedIn.
But there's something a little refreshing about the honesty, no?
I mean, just going for it, yeah, in a way.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Thank you. That's not an endorsement for LinkedIn. But I wish you the best in terms of... navigating all this. We're all in this world. Okay, the point of tonight was not to shut it down, but like be conscious of these five issues that we discussed tonight. One is the slander, verbal abuse, the mindfulness, distractions, and some of the inappropriate sites, modesty, humility. Very, very important to keep these in mind. And like anything else, it's a great drug. It can cure a lot of issues, but it's got some pretty serious side effects. Hopefully this is helpful in managing some of those side effects. Thank you for joining, everyone. What's our next series? What are we doing? We don't know, do we?
Tequila tasting next week.
Oh, next week. We just have a little of a social here.
Yeah.
We're going to be learning about tequila. And maybe we'll talk a little about some blessings things that come up with drinking alcohol. It's connected to our class tonight a little because we talked about alcohol having a potential downside. But also has a great upside as well. So that'll be next week, and then we're going to be starting a new series afterwards. We'll get you guys information about that. Oh, Purim. Oh, you do? Please, tell everyone.
Oh, yeah, that's what
we
do.
Also, we have a Shabbat dinner this week if anyone would like to join.
Oh.
It's a game night Shabbat dinner, and we also have a comedian coming to perform.
We still have some spots for the dinner if anybody would like to come.
You want to join?
Friday night, dinner. You want to come? Yeah, you have a great comedian.
Oh, hey,
yeah, what's up, old friend?
Where did you touch your
mouth? I said it was past the professor. I know that's a little
confusing. I guess it doesn't feel like a baby. I'm like,
I just
Sure. How did I You know what I did that really helped? First, I'm very my family, like my grandfather. The thing I can do is I try to yeah, there's like a heartfelt email explaining why this meant a lot to me. So it wasn't just like, can you come into MJ thing? And I tried to like send it to was like, I told my parents, no, but I sent it to friends of them. I sent it to
All right, fellows. Yeah, let's get this picture going. If you never got a fellow, we want to enjoy our dinner. Happy for classes.
Are we doing this?
Are you bringing your
Everybody,
waiting on people.
It's not
the
usual.
It's
not the usual.
It's not
the usual.
It's not
the usual.
It's not the usual. It's not the usual. It's not the usual. It's not the usual. It's not the
usual.
What happened to this thing?
Oh,
thank you.
He
was my counselor in camp as a kid. He had a big influence on me.
Next to
Meek.
What's that?
No,
never
mind.
Okay. All right, welcome everyone.
Sarbanes-Oxley.
It's like that you have to have like a count. It's like what keeps accounts from like never being.
Did everyone get you weren't here last week, but did everyone get a chance to peruse this article? The Sabbath?
I read the book.
You read the whole book? Yeah. How long ago?
Three? Yeah.
All right, I'm going to do it again.
Duran.
Just take one and pass them around. What's that?
Well, he missed it. We called Dash.
Oh, no, we missed it.
Oh, wait, Maddie wasn't there.
No, she was. She was.
What?
Guys, have you met perhaps. We won't even tell.
Oh boy.